Good morning. It is July 14th, and we're about halfway through the summer battle. We've had a consistent amount of rainfall in the northern part of the state, and we have had some warmer to hot temperatures down the southern part of the state as summer has probably finally started to arrive. Online today, we've got Dr. Dave Shetler, we've got Dr. Xiaowei Wu, we've got Dr. Dave Gardner. Leading us off today, Dr. Gardner, weed update.
All right, greetings everyone. Go ahead and share my screen. So what I wanted to talk about today was a couple of things. First off, crabgrass. Okay, if you're near heat sinks like sidewalks, driveways and stuff, your crabgrass might be pretty far along. It might even be beginning to produce seed heads. This is what crabgrass looks like out in open turf at our research plots in central Ohio. So I guess this would almost be the average of what crabgrass looks like in the state right now. So just beginning to tiller, maybe putting on the occasional one or two tillers. And so we're at that point where the crabgrass is going to start growing very rapidly, you know, like literally every day it's going to be bigger than it was the day before. And before long, you know, it will have fully tillered out and you'll start seeing, you know, the production of seed heads. So this is about the time that if you didn't put down a pre-emergence herbicide or if your pre-emergence herbicide has failed, you can attempt to control post-emergence. Now, the two active ingredients that we usually use post-emergence are either quinclorac or tapramazone. Both of these are post-patent, and so they're available in a variety of different products. Either of them will work fine on their own. Tapramazone, you'll get that bleaching, you know, if you use that by itself. Quinclorac, if the crabgrass isn't fully tillered out, sometimes you can get less than desirable control. So usually I like to recommend, if possible, to consider the use of a combination of the two. So half the label rate of quinclorac and half the label rate of tapramazone. Now, since mesotrione is the same type of chemistry as tapramazone, you can also use a half a rate of mesotrione and a half a rate of quinclorac, but either of those two combinations work exceedingly well for crabgrass control. You should mow to reduce the seed head development. Of course, you know, you have crabgrass because there were seeds in the soil. So preventing the formation of any more of those is a good thing. And then if you do have crabgrass issues now, in addition to attempting to control post-emergence, you should map those areas out so that you can put out a pre-emerge application in those places in early 2024. Let's talk a little bit about nut sedge now too. So sedges have edges, right? So triangular shaped stems, leaves going in three different directions. Yellow nut sedge is what we concern ourselves the most in this part of the country, but we are seeing Kalinga now too. So this is false green Kalinga and it spreads via rhizomes. And so unlike yellow nut sedge, it can actually form mats in the turf that will choke it out. Whereas yellow nut sedge is just aesthetically displeasing. But anyway, for the control of sedges, we have a variety of different products. Two of them are relatively newer. So Dismiss NXT, Celero, and Vexus. If we look at Celero, that one, it's best to use that after the sedge has reached three leaf stage. Now, this product, I have had exceedingly good results with in my trials. It's maybe a little bit more expensive, but it does work very, very well. Another new herbicide or a newer herbicide, pyrimisulfan, which is Vexus. This is from PBI Gordon. Right now, this is a granular formulation. Rumor has it that there is a liquid formulation that is in the works. But for now, it's a granular product, which the advantage with that, of course, is that you'd have reduced volatility and drift if you've got sedge growing near sensitive areas. So it's available either in a 2-pound shaker or a 35-pound bag. And again, post-emergence to actively growing weeds. And then also Dismiss NXT is a newer formulation of sulfentrazone, which also works very, very well for sedges. Ed, that's what I have for today.
Thank you, Dr. Gardner. Vital information. Any concerns as far as temperature and any of those products, Dave, as far as phytotoxic responses, or all safe?
I always try to put out these products, you know, Vexus would be different because it's a granule, but any liquid formulation I try to apply when it's 80 degrees or lower, not just because of the phytotoxicity concerns, but remember one of the functions of control is how long the herbicide stays in liquid form on the leaf And the warmer it is and the drier it is when you spray in the middle of the afternoon, you know, bright sunshine, it's hot and sunny, whatever. It's that if the leaf is only wet for 5 to 10 minutes after application, that means you've got 5 to 10 minutes to get the herbicide into the plant, which may not be enough. So I absolutely have had instances where I take a really good herbicide and I spray it in the middle of the afternoon, you know, like 85 degrees sunny, not any wind, but also pretty low humidity. And it looks like I got no control. And it's usually because I didn't get enough of the herbicide into the plant. So when possible, using those products earlier in the day tends to yield better results.
All right. Thank you. All right. Next up, with some destruction and devastation on the grub control end, Dr. Wu.
Good morning, everyone. Today, I would like to talk about white grubs, kind of follow up on the topic Dr. Dave Sheffner mentioned last time. So let me share the screen. So there are different types of white grub species that cause damage in Ohio on the turf grass. They're ranging from a very large size, like a green drum beetle, and to the very small size, like black turf grass attenuous. But except for black turf grass attenuous, which may have 2 generations a year, and then the male drum beetle take a few years to finish one life cycle, but most of the white grubs have an annual life cycle. So we can say that the grubs, they overwinter at a novel stage, and then they pupate mostly in June, and then they emerge into adults and they eggs, and then go through 3 novel stages and go through the winter. So the best time to control them will be the egg laying stage as a preventative control. That will be, usually we do it from June to June, July, and also you can do it through mid-August. And so the best time to do that is around the egg laying to the early grub stage. And there are a couple of options that we can use for preventative control, the neonicotinoids and some dimites. And by doing that, because both of these types of insecticides, they have systemic activities. So and also when we apply them for white grub control, at this time it's a very good time. And meanwhile, they may provide, some of those products may provide control of the change bugs and also caterpillars such as soil webworms as well. That's what I have. Thank you.
Dr. Shetler.
Let's see if I can bring this up. There we go. I wanted to also put in a couple of additional things about some of our white grubs. Still mass chafers over most of Ohio, and Japanese beetles in certain regions of Ohio are primary pests. I've noticed at least on, you know, the social media, TikTok and Instagram and Facebook, there's a whole bunch of postings about what I call Japanese beetle don'ts. Remember that there are certain plants that Japanese beetles really love when it comes to the trees. Linden is one of their favorite hosts. Of course, they really love grapes, but I don't think many people plant very many grapes as a landscape ornamental around their plants. But when it comes to roses, they really love the yellow roses. They'll just come in and devour the roses before they can even open up very much. And so, again, if you can concentrate on in the future, if you have choices of plants, try to find some of the plants that they don't prefer. We do have a fact sheet on that on our Ohio line that does list the preferred plants and maybe some other options of plants that you can use. Excuse me. The other thing that I'm seeing is these stupid bag of bugs pheromone traps for Japanese beetles just won't go away. I guess it's really hard for people to understand that when you've got this bag with a writhing mass of maybe 4,000 or 5,000 beetles in there that you haven't done something good. but there's been very good research on this. Dan Potter down in Kentucky has published the most on this, that basically the traps bring in more beetles from surrounding areas than would normally be in your landscape, and the traps themselves. It's kind of funny, if you actually go out there and watch one of these traps, the beetles hit those yellow veins, and for every beetle that gets in the bag, there's another beetle that hit the vein and landed on the turf down below. Then they'll usually get up and maybe fly over to the nearby ornamental plant. So you're actually going to bring more beetles into the area. They're very likely to damage the plants more than they would have normally. And frankly, we put these out in our test plots when we're doing grub studies. I just leave the bag off of it to bring the beetles in so that they'll lay their eggs in the turf. So you can do what I used to do when I was living up in Delaware, Ohio. We had this grumpy old guy that nobody liked down at the end of the block. He and I were great buddies because I'd give him some traps to put in his yard. And I was probably not a nice thing to say, but I knew he was pulling the Japanese beetles out of my yard into his yard. Also remember, mention that right now is the time that Japanese beetle and mast chafers and several of the other grub species are laying their eggs. All white grubs lay a dehydrated egg. And remember that egg must absorb moisture within 36 hours to 48 hours. It will become spherical, and it has to absorb that moisture from the surrounding soil in order to develop. And if it doesn't absorb that moisture, that's why we often tell the people, go ahead and let your lawn go dormant. But we've had plenty of rainfall events coming by, and my feeling is most of the white grub eggs that get laid in our turf grass are going to hydrate because there's adequate moisture in there now. Also, I've had several reports of these giant mutant Japanese beetles hovering over people's lawns. Those are not Japanese beetles. Those are green June beetles. It's kind of a unique one. It freaks people out because it does fly during the daytime. They're kind of bumbling critters. They'll run right into you, and it's one of these smacks you in the head or chin. It's not a pleasant experience. And of course, people who don't like critters freak out over that. But the adults are absolutely harmless, but they will lay eggs in turf, especially turf that has a heavy thatch layer. So if you've got thatchy turf, you might want to watch out for these green June beetles hovering over that lawn particular area. Also, we've had sightings of the annual, or what we call dog day cicadas, are out and singing. And that means that the cicada killers are out, because the cicada killers capture and sting the dog day cicadas, paralyze them, drag them back to their burrow and bury them, lay an egg on them, and their larvae feed on them. They are kind of pugnacious. Both the males and the females will, as I say, inspect or try to intimidate anybody that comes into their territory. But they are, I've never had anybody get stung by one of these things unless they've tried to pick it up. If they picked up one that they thought was dormant or not moving around, they might get stung with it. But otherwise, they're just going to intimidate you. Remember that we do have one product that can be used to control these. It's called Delta Dust. It comes in a squeeze bottle applicator where you can shake it and squeeze out the dust. And what you want to do is you just want to apply a little bit of dust around the burrow opening of cicada killer, so that when the female comes in and out of that burrow, she'll pick the dust up on her legs. When she grooms herself and ingests that dust, it will take her out. Okay, that's all I've got for today, Ed.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Shetler, for all of that information. For those of you who missed, I just disappeared. I'm now back. Magic. Just a couple of things on the disease front. So some reports of issues with summer patch appearing. It seems like there has been a change in some product use. And looking at rough calculations, the amount of active ingredient On the newer products, both at high label rates, maybe about 10% less going out. Don't know if that's the exact cause of it. Probably going to be a little bit more conversation that follows up on that. Dollar spot has most certainly exploded in a lot of places. And as we continue to warm up and probably get a bit more stressed on poor grains, I'd expect to see some anthracnose starting to appear. Those leaf spot issues that Todd was talking about last week, I think, have dissipated somewhat, particularly in rough scenarios like that, as rainfall has kind of turned to being a little bit more consistent. But I would expect with the increased temperatures, particularly further south, that we're going to hear more reports of things like brown patch and pythium. So it's kind of getting into that period of time where people are going to be making their money. One thing that, you know, obviously you want to be keeping an eye on is your irrigation scheduling and making sure that if conditions are humid, reducing the amount of water that you think you need to put out, because ultimately that becomes a bigger problem towards the fungal pathology than what we might see otherwise. Other things, our field day schedule is up. And so on August 1, the OTF field day, and then on August 2nd, our OLCA, our Ohio Lawn Care field day, they're both in Columbus. And then on August 7th in Worcester, we have the second Northeast Ohio field day for the lawn care group. Also, one other thing to add, we will have more details, I expect, early next week. But October 2nd, I'm hoping, is a Monday or Tuesday, not a Saturday or Sunday. But hold that day for the ATI scholarship outing. We're hoping to be somewhere in the Akron area for that this year. So without further ado, I will leave it at that. Dr. Carr is obviously not sharing the contact details this week, but bookeyeturf@osu.edu is the email address. And if there are questions, feel free to reach out through that, and we will endeavor to answer them as quickly as possible. Hopefully we have no technical glitches next week. We will see you all again, and talk to you soon.